Dr. Angie Barnum, I am an Extension Livestock Veterinarian with the University of Minnesota Extension Service.
Angie, today we're going to be talking about the cases of New World screwworm in the southern U.S. and how different states are essentially responding to the news. In Minnesota, what is first and foremost the messaging that you're getting out there, in particular to livestock producers right now?
For livestock producers in Minnesota, we are considering this, yes, an important issue for our country, but not something that's currently urgent for Minnesota beef, dairy, small ruminant, swine, or equine producers.
So does that essentially mean just keep doing what you've been doing from like a biosecurity, animal health standpoint?
You got it. The importance of a certificate of veterinary inspection before moving animals is already in place. And continuing that good practice before moving animals from state to state is the best advice we can follow here in Minnesota right now, given that the risk of introduction of New World screwworm up here in one of the northernmost states is going to be primarily focused on travel associated with animals.
New World screwworm itself, we've been reporting on this for months, and it's kind of disturbing when you think about what's happening here. But it's also important to get that information out because you want to know what to look for. Also, there probably can be misinformation about it. So when you break this down to someone, whether it's a livestock owner, somebody who has a pet and they're concerned about this, how do you describe how the infections occur, how you treat it, all of that?
I'm glad you asked, because arming ourselves with the knowledge of how this fly lives and dies is probably the most helpful advice I have for a concerned animal owner or livestock producer. Of course, the reason that this pest is so fearful, or we are so fearful of this pest, is because unlike a typical fly miasis or an infection with maggots, this type of fly, and it's more importantly, its larva, do not consume dead tissue. We would typically think of with an infected wound. The larva of the New World screwworm fly, of course, consume living tissue, making it sort of terrifying. But really, the age-old husbandry practices are the most important thing here. Eyes on our animals is the best thing that we can do. And of course, correlating that with any animal travel recently. So noticing wounds, treating wounds as much as we are able in the field in order to take away an opportunity for this fly to lay its eggs. And noticing wounds which just don't seem to be getting better. I have experience with the New World screwworm in another country treating a case with this, and I have some veterinary colleagues who are in the same boat who have maybe dealt with this pest in other places than the US. And typically you'll notice a wound that's just not healing if you're looking for it. So you got to get under the animal. Sometimes you got to make sure you're getting under and looking at the umbilicus. And oftentimes, if you're lucky, you'll unfortunately smell it before you see it. So using your senses is one of the most important factors in controlling the New World screwworm. And that just goes back to good animal husbandry, being able to lay your eyes on your animals, and knowing who to contact if you have any questions or concerns.
I spoke to Minnesota Ag Commissioner Tom Peterson several days ago about New World screwworm, and he talked about the communication that it takes. And when this is something like a national outbreak, where we're talking about something that's occurring in Texas and New Mexico, in Minnesota, making sure that the proper chains are notified, USDA is involved in this. And the thing I wanted to bring up about Commissioner Peterson is he talked about Minnesota having kind of some experience in that regard, just with high path avian influenza and the state response, the federal response, the interagency partnerships. And he made it sound like, you know, it's good to have that experience to fall back on when you're dealing something like with New World screwworm.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Unfortunately, Minnesota does have some experience with previous infectious disease outbreaks. And although we are not currently dealing with New World screwworm in our state, I would completely agree that communication is important at the level you're describing. It's also important at the level of individual producers knowing what to do if they have any concerns. Maybe their animals have traveled or a portion of the herd has traveled. And now they have some concerns. The most important thing right now for, just a typical average livestock producer in Minnesota is to know who you're going to contact. The most expedited route, if you were to have a concern about New World screwworm in your herd, would be to have an existing relationship with a veterinarian. Veterinarians are not obligated to respond to New World screwworm. The veterinarians who will respond are at the state level. If you have a working relationship with a local veterinarian in place before any concerns, that individual is most likely going to be able to connect you quickly with the state level response. Individuals without a veterinary relationship will still be able to report, but really taking this time to get plugged in with a veterinary professional near you, start supporting them in the daytime hours, and knowing who they are is going to be really helpful if there are any concerns with New World screwworm in Minnesota.
Angie, you might have touched on this already, but just in case you hadn't, the treatment. I've talked to some veterinarians at World Pork Expo, and they were confident that if identified early, treatment is very effective. Is that something you would agree with?
Absolutely. This is not a difficult infestation to treat. There are many products that are now available on a conditional use or emergency use basis. However, simply removing the larva completely and treating the wound like any other wound, in theory, will also address this infestation. There's no magic potion besides, as you mentioned, noticing infestations early because of the level of damage these larvae can cause. They can really set an animal up for sepsis quickly if we're within a matter of a couple of weeks. If we're not noticing these infestations early, but once they're noticed, there are a variety of treatment options. Absolutely.
I don't know how much you're able to speak on this because it is happening so far from Minnesota, but the efforts by USDA with the sterile flies, maybe explain the science behind that a little bit and how that can work in the fight against New World screwworm.
The sterile insect technique is a fascinating example of using the insect's biology against them. And so it's a really smart technique, which is ultimately what is credited for eradicating New World screwworm from the US the first time. And the USDA is confident that this technique will be useful again to ultimately extinguish this pest from the US one more time. So, the sterile insect technique takes advantage of the fact that the female New World screwworm fly mates only one time in her lifetime. Now, if she's able to successfully mate, she will deposit eggs in a multitude of wounds before she dies in about 3 weeks. If she does not mate, or if she mates with a sterilized male fly, she will go on to lay eggs which won't hatch or just not lay any eggs at all. And so instead of becoming potentially 3,000 more flies, she just will die off after she mates one time. So the sterile male flies, which are being released currently, are being released in response to reported cases further into Texas and currently New Mexico. Those are a key strategy for controlling the fly. We, as individuals, when we see a case, we can control the larva. As previously mentioned, we can treat them with a variety of different in a variety of different ways. What we can't truly do is control the fly as just an average, typical individual. the sterile insects or the sterile flies, which are being released in response to reported cases, are the way that we also intercept the fly part of the life cycle. The USDA has been releasing these sterile flies along the US-Mexico border since about the beginning of this year, and they've also been released throughout parts of Central America in the coordinated response to this current outbreak. So I want to emphasize the fact that reporting cases is important because it allows for the direction of where sterile flies will be released, ultimately helping target the broader country's response. And it's maybe worth mentioning that reported cases aren't typically euthanized. They're simply given treatments, and then that sterile insect strategy is targeted based on where we're seeing those new cases. So it's really important to report for that reason. It allows us to ultimately utilize this great technology in new places as needed.
I'll admit this is kind of a selfish question because I find flies very annoying, but it does tie into the livestock producer, and flies can be a nuisance in livestock barns, things like that. The release of these sterile flies, are we looking at a much higher population of flies seasonally because of this strategy, or is that not something you could really speak on?
That's a great question, Mark. I don't have a lot of, evidence to say one way or another. Any increase in a fly population, given the increase, or give, excuse me, any increase in the fly population, given the release of these sterile flies, would be short-lived because of the fact that these insects are sterile. And so th they would live for no more than 3 weeks in an area, and not be able to continuously reproduce as we're accustomed to, especially in some of the areas here, with mosquitoes and flies simply overpowering us. So no, that would not be the case long term in an area where sterile flies were released.
You nailed it. That's my nightmare, going out in the backyard and being overpowered by flies or mosquitoes. So that's
Right.
good to hear.
We don't
Angie,
need any more, really.
no, we don't. Anything else on this that we haven't covered yet that you think is important?
I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and the opportunity to have highlighted that it, you know, any we think of this as primarily a cattle disease because we're seeing a lot of the cases so far in cattle, but any warm-blooded animal, including humans, is at risk. And so this is not just a cattle disease. Cats, dogs, wildlife, other farm animals are certainly at risk. And human cases are very uncommon. You would know if you were infested, likely. But that is a risk here, not just cows. And of course, to contact your medical professional should you have any concerns, in humans. But the other points that you allowed me to mention, I think were really helpful that it's currently not an urgent issue in the northern US. We are able to just kind of learn from what our neighbors to the south are doing. We're able to hope for a winter climate soon. That usually we don't hope for winter, but we hope that we can make it through the summer months here without a travel associated incursion into any of our northern states. And just to be aware of where the infested and surveillance zones are in the US and take the usual necessary precautions like a veterinary inspection before and, if needed, even after travel.